Turn to Proverbs 6:10. We're going to cover three verses tonight, Lord willing. We're still talking about the sin of sloth. There in I'll read verses 9 and 10. It says, "How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep?" That's the verse we covered last week. "Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man." And that will be the verse that we'll cover next. But let's look at this number 10. "Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep." So this is a continuation of the condemnation of the sluggard, still. And he starts off there with the word "yet." He says, "Yet a little sleep, a little slumber." "Yet" means in addition or in continuation, besides, also. Means further, furthermore, moreover, and with a numeral or the like, it equals more, as in yet a or yet one, like yet one more, yet another. So it means another or one more. And, you know, the Bible's very accurate to human nature, even after all these hundreds and thousands of years, because to this day, people are always looking for just another 15 minutes or just one more hour, right? They're just always wanting just a little bit more. I don't want to get up quite yet. I just need a little bit more sleep. And this has been going on for thousands of years. What happens, though, is that just another 15 minutes turns into 30 minutes, 45 minutes, 60 minutes as you keep hitting the snooze button. And before you know it, you've slept some real time away. And maybe you're late to work at this point, and, you know, then you're really starting to get yourself in trouble. So the sluggard, he always needs just a little more sleep. He says, "Yet a little sleep, a little slumber." Little is opposed, means opposed to great, often synonymous with small. So he just needs a little bit. I don't need an extra hour, I just need an extra 5 minutes, which eventually turns into the hour. Yeah, exactly, that snooze button. I'm sure we've probably all been there. His slothfulness is more easily justified and rationalized if it's only a little more sleep, right? You'd feel like a lazy bum if you just said, you know, I'm just going to roll over and sleep for another 3 hours. But if it's just 10 minutes at a time, then it's easier to justify. The problem is that a bunch of littles soon adds up to a lot, right? And as I said last Wednesday, all those little hours add up to 10 and a half years at the end of your life. Remember, 1 hour of extra sleep every day, 10 and a half years lost of production by the time you're ready to check out of this world. He says, "Yet a little sleep, a little slumber," which sleep and slumber are the exact same thing, "a little folding of the hands to sleep." To fold is to lay the arms, etc., together so as to overlap, to clasp one's hands together. And people still, to this day, like I said, human nature hasn't changed. People fold their hands to sleep, fold their hands together when they go to sleep. If you were going to show somebody some hand signals that you want to sleep or they want to sleep, what do? This, right? You fold your hands, put your head on your hands, right? And people still do this. Sometimes people actually sleep that way. Or maybe you sleep with your hands together or clasped together in front of your chest whenever you're sleeping. Some people do. I do. I got a body pillow. Oh, yeah, I got a body pillow, which I have my arms around, and I, like, have my hands together on the other side. So, yes, I fulfill this scripture every night. A little folding of the hands to sleep. This little sleep, which is synonymous with laziness in this case, ends up compounding over the course of years, and it eventually ends up in one's property being overgrown and left in ruin. Because Solomon says the same thing, same phrase, here in Proverbs 24, verses 30 through 34. He says, "I went by the field of the slothful," Proverbs 24, 30, "and by the vineyard of the man void of understanding, and lo, it was all grown over, with thorns and nettles had covered the face thereof, and the stone wall thereof was broken down. Then I saw and considered it well. I looked upon it and received instruction." And here's exactly what he said there in chapter 6. "Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man," which is exactly what he says in the next verse. So he looks at this, and the guy that's just hitting the snooze button a few times, you can tell it by looking at his yard and his vineyard and his stone wall, right? The stone wall at the end of the driveway is falling down because he kept hitting the snooze button. And the yard looks like a pasture, right? Because he kept hitting the snooze button. His shrubs look like redwoods, you know, grown up over the gutters of the house. I actually know somebody that has shrubs that have never been trimmed that are like, they got to be 8 or 10 feet tall, and they're over the gutter of the house at this point. But probably overtake the house one of these days. But anyway, that's what happens. A little sleep, a little slumber, and before you know it, your place is overgrown and you look like you're some hillbilly white trash, right? It's just because it all adds up. Slothfulness will eventuate in one's buildings falling down. I made reference to this, just made mention of it last time. It's in Ecclesiastes 10:18. I don't think I gave you the verse last time. Ecclesiastes 10 and verse 18. It says, "By much slothfulness the building decayeth, and through idleness of the hands the house droppeth through." If you keep hitting that snooze button whenever you hear a drip coming from the roof, it's not going to take long, and that house is going to fall down, and the roof is going to drop through. That's definitely one thing that you don't want to be lazy about, is a leaking roof. There's a lot of things you can let go, but leaking roof is not one of them. But, you know, the sloth, he just says, well, you know, I don't feel like it. I don't feel like doing it right now. Not today. And then it says in Ecclesiastes 4:5 that the fool foldeth his hands together to sleep, and then he eats his own flesh, which is a really strange verse and a concept, and I'm going to explain this as best I can. I think I have a pretty good explanation for it. Ecclesiastes 4:5. Let's see here. 4:5. It says, "The fool foldeth his hands together." Remember what you do when you sleep, you little folding of the hands to sleep. "The fool foldeth his hands together and eateth his own flesh." It's kind of odd, right? He folds his hands together and eats his own flesh. Well, we know folding the hands together is sleeping, right? But what is this eating his own flesh stuff? Well, if you think about it, if you ate your own flesh, you have destroyed yourself, right? You're consuming yourself, right? So if you sleep too much, you will end up consuming or destroying yourself or eating your own flesh by oversleeping and not doing things, by being lazy, in other words. There are a couple different ways that you could destroy your own flesh this way. It could bring a person to poverty and hunger, which will consume and harm his body. Proverbs 19:15. It says, "Slothfulness casteth into a deep sleep, and an idle soul shall suffer hunger." So when you suffer hunger, you eventually start losing weight, right? You start shedding some pounds, and what is it? What have you done? You have, in a sense, consumed your own flesh, right? You've eaten your own flesh. You've destroyed yourself through ultimately not working and then not being able to eat and, you know, suffering hunger. Proverbs 23 and verse 21. It says, "For the drunkard and the glutton shall come to poverty, and drowsiness shall clothe a man with rags." So was that the verse that I wanted? 23, yeah, 21, yep. Yep, so anyway, he ends up in poverty is the point. And I guess you can end up in poverty two different ways. You could end up in poverty by not working or by eating too much, one of the two, and you'll end up in poverty eventually, one way or the other. But then there's also this aspect of it, that the fool foldeth his hands together and eats his own flesh. It could be that he destroys his own family, who are his own flesh. Remember what it was said there in Genesis 2:24, that it was said that a man should leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and the two should be one flesh, right? So if a guy is just keep hitting the snooze button and gets fired from his job because he's too darn lazy to get up, then he ends up not providing, and then he's consuming his own family. In other words, he's harming them, right? His own flesh. And Genesis 29:14. Likewise shows us that one's family are his own flesh. This is what Laban said to Jacob whenever he, it was the first time that they met, he said that he was his own flesh. Genesis 29 and verse 14. It says, "And Laban said to him, Surely thou art my bone and my flesh. And he abode with him the space of a month." So you could end up harming your family, in other words. And I'll give you one more in Isaiah 58 and verse 7. It says, "Is it not to deal thy bread to the hungry, and that thou bring the poor that are cast out to thy house? When thou seest the naked, thou cover him, and that thou hide not thyself from thine own flesh, like thine own people, your own family. You've hidden yourself. You haven't helped out your own family, in other words. So this could be how somebody could eat his own flesh. And I just thought today, and this term has become popular recently, within the last, I don't know, decade, I suppose. Have you ever heard the term eat the rich? Like the idea of taxing the rich to give it to everybody else. They call that eating the rich. And that's the socialists love that idea. But, you know, they're not literally eating him, but they are destroying him and taking all of his stuff. Yeah, eating away at him. So that would be eating your own flesh, in other words.
Do you think that's where the term eat their young come from? Like, I've heard of a lot of professions, they say they eat their young, meaning the new people in that profession, instead of teaching them how to be better at it, they're actually horrible to them and they destruct them and or destroy them instead of build them up.
I haven't heard that term. I've heard it with animals, but no, I've never heard that term. Could be, though. Well, that takes care of Proverbs 6 and verse 10. You had a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, and that leads us to our next verse. Turn to Proverbs 6:11. This is the last verse in this series of verses dedicated to the sluggard. It says, "So shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man." And the context of this, of course, is verses 9 and 10. "How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep." And then our verse, "So shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man." So let's look at that first clause there. "So shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth." So sleeping excessively leads to poverty. Proverbs 20 and verse 13. Proverbs 20:13 says, "Love not sleep, lest thou come to poverty. Open thine eyes, and thou shalt be satisfied with bread." And we'll get back to that verse here in just a second. But, you know, we should, like I said, I think it was last week, sleep to live, not live to sleep. We shouldn't love sleep, but sleep's like anything else, like good food or like a good drink or like time, good quality time with friends. These are all blessings from God that we can and should enjoy, but we can't love them too much. Anything done in excess and without moderation can end up being our downfall, and sleep is no different. Proverbs 23 and verse 21. It says, "For the drunkard and the glutton shall come to poverty, and drowsiness shall clothe a man with rags." Oh, that's the part of the verse I missed. I confused myself last time because I was looking at the drunkard and the glutton coming to poverty. The part that I wanted in the verse was "drowsiness shall clothe a man with rags." I wonder, because I looked at it, I'm like, what am I trying to get out of this verse? That's what I was trying to say anyway. So it says, "So shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth." Poverty is the condition of having little or no wealth or material possessions, indigence, I'm not sure where the emphasis is there, indigence. Is that like the indigent people? People talk about the indigent peoples? I wondered about that. I should have looked it up. Destitution, want, in various degrees. So want is, I think I'll define that a little bit later here, but want is lack or need. It's not desire like we generally use it today. So poverty is whenever, everybody knows this, when you have very little or no wealth and you're in destitution, you're in great want. Sleeping too much causes poverty because The sluggard is sleeping instead of working. Obviously, that's where the poverty is coming in. If he would get up and work, he would be filled with food and necessary possessions. And that takes us back to Proverbs 20:13, which we just read here a minute ago. Love not sleep, lest thou come to poverty. Open thine eyes, and thou shalt be satisfied with bread. So if you open your eyes, and obviously the implication is here, open your eyes and go to work, right? Not just wake up and all of a sudden bread's going to appear, right? You get up, go to work, you make money, then you buy the bread and so on. So if you stop sleeping and start working, then you'll have food and necessary things. So the poverty of the sluggard will come, as this verse tells us, as one that traveleth. To travel, and I put the first definition in there, and I guess I will read it just for the sake of it, but I always like to do that. If I'm using a secondary definition, I like to put the first one in there just so you know that I'm not cherry-picking and just picking the definition that I feel like. Apparently, travel must have originally basically just been a different spelling of travail, because as we'll see here, it means primarily to torment, distress, to suffer affliction, to labor, toil, to suffer the pains of parturition. And then it says see travail. That is not how the verse is being, the word is being used here at all. It's being used in the number two sense, which means to make a journey, to go from one place to another, to journey. And it can be used figuratively as well, it says. So this poverty of the sluggard is going to come like one that traveleth, like one that's making a journey, or he's coming from one place to another. And if you think about it, travelers, especially in biblical times, would show up unexpectedly. Imagine in biblical times, you're not calling on your cell phone when you're 15 minutes out, right? You're not even calling the day before you leave. I mean, you could send a letter, maybe, I suppose, but you'd have to send a letter weeks in advance before you ever got there, and then you still wouldn't really know exactly when the guy is going to show up, because who knows how the traveling would go. So in those days, when a traveler showed up, you were not expecting him. And I got a couple of verses here which will prove that for you. 2 Samuel 12 and verse 4. 2 Samuel 12, verse 4. It would have been interesting to live in the old days where you might just be at home, just sitting there, enjoying a meal. Somebody knocks on the door, and here's Cousin Joe from Indiana, and he's been traveling 3 weeks to get here, and you didn't even know it, and just give him a bedroom, and he'd stay for a week or so and be on his way.
Well, you didn't head out to see someone else when he was on the way.
Right.
You didn't go see Cousin Sally.
Right, right, exactly.
They're coming with six kids.
Yeah, right. 2 Samuel 12 and verse 4. This is a hypothetical account here. When Nathan told David about the rich man that came into town, was it there was a traveler, came onto a rich man, and the rich man didn't have anything to give him. And so this didn't actually happen, but it obviously, he told the story because it was something that could have happened. It was totally believable. It says, "And there came a traveler unto the rich man, and he spared to take of his own flock and of his own herd to dress for the wayfaring man that was come unto him, but took the poor man's lamb and dressed it for the man that was to come." So the story here was the poor man had this little lamb that he loved so much, and he slept with it in his bed and everything. It was like his little pet. Well, people sleep with their dogs, right? And so he just loved this lamb, like people would love their dog. And the wayfaring traveler comes to the rich man, and the rich man doesn't take his own lamb. He goes and take the poor guy's lamb and slays it and feeds him with it. And David was incensed. He was angry. He said, "The man that did this shall die." And then Nathanael said, "Thou art the man. You took another man's lamb," in other words. "You could have had anything you wanted, and you took some other guy's wife." But the point is here, the traveler just showed up, and he wants fed. You weren't even expecting him. It's like Jesus talked about with the friend that was banging on the guy's door because a friend of his came over at midnight and he didn't have any food to give him, and he wanted him to give him a loaf of bread. And I guess in those days you were pretty much expected to feed somebody if they showed up, even at midnight. And then Job 31 and verse 32 will give you one more example here. Job 31, 32. Says, the stranger did not lodge in the street, but I opened my doors to the traveler. So obviously, you know, just a guy that's just coming through, and you'll read about that. And there was that one guy that went to get his concubine and came to a certain city, and he, instead of sleeping out on the street, the guy said, hey, come in and stay with me. I think that was pretty common in those days. You just go into a place and knock on somebody's door and ask if you can stay the night, because there probably weren't hotels unless you went to a bigger city. So anyway, the point is, it says there that the poverty will come as one that traveleth. So in other words, it's going to come at a time when you don't expect it. And likewise, poverty will not come to the sluggard immediately, but it will show up when he's not expecting it. And that usually happens with things. Usually you can get away with things. If you do foolish or sinful or just criminal things, a lot of times it doesn't happen right away. I mean, punishment doesn't come immediately. Sometimes, you know, you've seen those videos where you got the, I forget what they're called, but instant karma. Yeah, where the guy, you know, runs by, grabs the old lady's purse, and then gets hit by a bus, like as soon as he steps into the street or something. But generally speaking, you know, that doesn't always happen. But if the sluggard fails to plant in the cold weather of spring, then, you know, he may have enough food to get him through the summer possibly and go out and maybe pick some apples in the neighbor's vineyard or something. But by the time the harvest comes around, the next harvest, if he hasn't planted, he's not gonna be able to make it through. Proverbs 20 and verse 4. Proverbs 20 and verse 4. We've been over this verse a time or two in the last couple of weeks. It says, the sluggard will not plow by reason of the cold, therefore shall he beg and harvest and have nothing. So you don't know exactly when the poverty is coming, but it's like the guy that traveleth. He's going to show up eventually, and then the chickens are going to come home to roost. And if we don't work and save money while we can, then poverty will eventually catch up with us years later when we're too old to do anything about it. See, it's sin in general. It often takes years for sin to catch up with us, but it always will, one way or the other. And just remember this, in any sin that you think maybe you've gotten away with, it will eventually catch up with you. We're going to have to answer for it, either in this life or at the judgment seat. 1 Timothy 5, 24 through 25. And it's scary for us, but it's also comforting knowing that this is what happens to the wicked too, that they get away with murder, literally, sometimes. But there is judgment coming. Either it'll happen now or it'll happen later, but they're not going to get away with it. 1 Timothy 5, 24 through 25. It says, some men's sins are open beforehand, going before to judgment, and some men they follow after. Likewise also, the good works of some are manifest beforehand, and they that are otherwise cannot be hid. So it's the same way with good and bad works. Sometimes bad works are punished right away, beforehand. Sometimes they follow after. You wait till you get to the judgment seat. Sometimes good works are rewarded soon afterwards. You do something good and you get blessed for it. You get a reward. But sometimes nobody knows, nobody notices, and you might foolishly think, well, that was a waste of time. I didn't even get rewarded for that. But you get rewarded at the judgment. And Jesus talked about that. At the second coming, everybody will receive for his deeds, whether he's done good or evil. And then look at Galatians 6 and verse 4. That's why it's great to be a Christian, because as Christians we know that we're going to be, if we do something in secret, we're going to be punished for it, so we don't want to do those things in secret. But we also know that if we do something and we don't get anything back for it now, that there will, God saw it, and that we will eventually get rewarded for the good that we have done. Whereas, you know, if you were an atheist or something, you'd think, well, what's the point? Why would I do anything good if it's not right out in the open where everybody can see it and I can be rewarded for it? Because it doesn't matter, ultimately. But it does matter for us.
Or you just want to do the good thing because that's what's comfortable with you. You're not worried about what you're going to get for it.
Right. Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Just, you know, it's kind of a reward in itself, I guess.
It is.
Just but typically people just get to where they do that and they go on down the road and they don't even keep thinking about it.
Yes.
Maybe the other guy does, but you don't keep thinking, well, you know, I haven't really had any accolades for that. You know?
Right, right. As they say, virtue is its own reward. So, yep. Galatians 6:7. Now, this has a dual application here. It has a natural primary application, which we never use this verse for, but it actually does work. It says, "Be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap." So literally, if you don't sow and you don't plant in the spring, you are going to reap nothing, right? If you don't do any work, you are not going to reap. Now, obviously, we use this in a figurative context, always, that you will sow what you reap. If you sow sin, you are going to reap punishment. You're going to reap judgment eventually. So it says, "So shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man." So the sluggard will be left in poverty, is what this verse is telling us, because want means, and I'm going to jump down to number two here, because the first one went out of usage in 1400. It means deficiency, shortage, lack of something desirable or necessary. It's the state of lacking the necessaries of life, penury, which is another word for poverty, destitution, also the condition of lacking food, famine, starvation. It means to come to want, to be reduced to penury. If I remember, let's see if I remember right, in Luke chapter 15, yeah, Luke 15 and verse 14, says, this is the prodigal son, when he got his living and then went and spent it with riotous living. It says, "And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want, in poverty and destitution. So much so that he was willing to eat the husk that he did feed the swine." Now that's what I call poor. Penury, as I mentioned, is a condition of being destitute or straitened. That's with an A-I-T, not G-H-T. Straitened in the necessaries of life, destitution, indigence, want, poverty. And destitution is down in number three, is the condition of being abandoned or left helpless, of being deprived or bereft of anything, the condition of wanting or being lacking. It is the condition of being destitute of resources, want of the necessaries of life. So thy want, thy poverty, in other words, will come as an armed man. So it comes as one that traveleth, and so that means you don't know when it's going to show up, but it's going to show up. As the traveler shows up, he is going to show up eventually. But it also comes as an armed man. Armed is furnished with arms or armor, fully equipped for war. So armed men are men of war who come to conquer and destroy. Right? They don't come with arms just to show off their cool new gun. Right? They show up to destroy. So want, in other words, poverty or destitution, will come to the sluggard like an invading soldier who will not spare. And like an armed soldier, poverty will destroy the sluggard. Proverbs 10 and verse 15. Proverbs 10 and verse 15. It says, "The rich man's wealth is his strong city. The destruction of the poor is their poverty." So poverty destroys. And yeah, I mean, you take everything somebody owns where you don't have anything, you don't have any clothes on your back or roof over your head, well, yeah, you're pretty well destroyed. That's like an armed man. That'll definitely take you out. And it says in Proverbs 19:15, that the idle soul is going to suffer hunger just like a people in a conquered country would. That's what happens when people are conquered. They end up suffering hunger, and that's what happens to the sluggard. Slothfulness casteth into a deep sleep, and an idle soul shall suffer hunger. So take heed and abstain from laziness, because poverty will come upon the sluggard unexpectedly and mercilessly, just like a traveler and an armed man. So that takes care of the exhortation to the sluggard. I turn to Proverbs 6:12. This is going to start a new section here for the next four verses. We'll just get into the first verse tonight. Proverbs 6 and verse 12. It says, a naughty person, a wicked man, walketh with a froward mouth. So let's look at the first part of that. Naughty person, a wicked man. Solomon here is switching topics from condemning laziness to condemning wickedness and frowardness there here in the next four verses. So a naughty person, when we're speaking of persons, means morally bad, wicked. Of children, it means wayward, disobedient, given to doing wrong. And this is another one of those words, and I know I've mentioned this before, that naughty isn't like the cute, oh, you're very naughty today. You've been disobedient and done wrong, and you're wayward. So it's interesting here that naughty means wicked. And as I'll mention here in just a second, we see right in this verse that the Bible has its own built-in dictionary. Because, I will mention that first since I just mentioned it, because it says a naughty person, a wicked man, right? So it is saying the same thing twice, right? It's talking about the same guy giving two different descriptions, a naughty person, a wicked man, and the definition of naughty was wicked, and the definition right in the very verse is wicked. Naughty means wicked. So this is just one of many examples of the Bible's built-in dictionary. That's one thing that the Hebrew scriptures are great for, especially in the Psalms, Proverbs, in the poetical books, Song of Solomon, Ecclesiastes. There's a lot of Hebrew parallelisms used there where the same thing is stated again in slightly different wording. And when you have that, then you can find synonyms and you can find word definitions right there within the text. That's one of the main ways that the Bible is its own dictionary. Another way would be whenever you see verses in the New Testament that are quoting verses in the Old Testament, and then when you compare the two quotes, you'll see the wording is a little bit different, and then you can see the differences, and you say, oh, well, this word was used in the New Testament, this word was used in the Old Testament, these are synonyms, they mean the same thing. Right? So you have a dictionary built in there. And then also, the Bible will show us that a naughty person is a bad person, which was the other part of the definition, in Jeremiah 24 and verse 2. I think what somebody should do, not me, because it would take forever, but what somebody should do is go through the whole Bible and define every word with the Bible and make a dictionary of definitions of every word in the Bible defined with the Bible. You probably couldn't do it with every word, but with every word that's possible. I think that'd be pretty cool. I think what else would be pretty cool is if you took all the Bible words and used the OED and looked up and found the correct definition based on context and everything for every single Bible word, and you had a dictionary of all the Bible words with the proper definition. But then they would just take all the hard work out of it, and everybody would be too lazy then, so. But anyway, Proverbs 24 and verse 2 says, one basket had very good figs, even like the figs that are first ripe. And the other basket had very naughty figs, which could not be eaten. They were so bad. There you go. Naughty equals bad. And what did the definition say? Naughty means morally bad, wicked. So right there you have the Bible giving us those very definitions. Wicked and bad. Wicked is bad in moral character, disposition, or conduct, inclined or addicted to willful wrongdoing, practicing or disposed to practice evil, morally depraved, a term of wide application but always of strong reprobation, implying a high degree of evil quality. So, wicked equals bad or naughty, in other words. So Solomon goes on to warn us of the characteristics and the judgment of evil men in the coming verses. We'll get to those next week. So right now he's just telling us about a wicked person and not a naughty person, a wicked man walketh with a froward mouth. But then he'll give us examples of that and go into more detail here in the next verses. Let's look at the second half of that verse. A naughty person, a wicked man walketh with a froward mouth. Now, to walk means to journey, move about, especially on foot. It's to go from place to place, to journey, wander. It is to go about in public, live, move in a place or region. So he walketh with a froward mouth. So this could mean literally walking from place to place, or more likely it means the way he lives, right? It's not just that he only starts spouting off nasty things out of his mouth when his feet are moving, right? He lives with a froward mouth, right? This is the way that he goes about his life, is always spewing forth vitriol. Froward is disposed to go counter to what is demanded or what is reasonable. Perverse, difficult to deal with, hard to please, means refractory, ungovernable. Also in a wider sense, bad, evilly disposed, naughty. It's the opposite of toward. So a person that is froward, he goes about life in a manner and communicates in a way that is contrary, unreasonable, perverse, difficult to deal with, hard to please, and ungovernable. In other words, he's basically just a bullheaded jerk. You ever met somebody like that? That is just a stubborn, opinionated, rebellious. He's just a jerk. There's no other way of putting it. If you say go right, he just goes left just for no other reason than you told him to go right and he goes left. He wouldn't have any other reason to do that other than he just wants to be a butthead. That's a froward person. And there are people out there like that. They never got their butts beat when they were children, I think. Because there are some children that they're like that. Their nature is like that. That you tell them to do one thing and they will just intentionally do the opposite just because they're hard-headed and they need that beat out of them. And if it doesn't, they're going to end up to be a real problem whenever they get older. Now, God hates a froward mouth. Proverbs 8 and verse 13. Proverbs 8:13 says, "The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride and arrogancy and the evil way and the froward mouth do I hate." This is wisdom personified. In other words, the Lord Jesus Christ, and he hates a froward mouth. So remember that the next time you want to mouth off to somebody that is a legitimate authority figure, remember, Jesus Christ hates that. And we should too. A wicked man with a froward mouth is the kind of man that we want to avoid at all costs. Look at Psalm 101 and verse 4. I can deal with a lot of people, but a guy with a froward mouth is probably on the lowest on my list of people that I want to deal with. He's the worst. Psalm 101 and verse 4. David said, "A froward heart shall depart from me. I will not know a wicked person." So he wasn't having that. And he was the king, and he could pretty much say, you know, "Depart from me, get out of here." He didn't have to deal with people like that if he didn't want to.
It's a complete waste of time.
Yes, it really is. It's like that, like it says, if a wise man contendeth with a foolish man, whether he rage or laugh, there is no rest. Right? You can't reason or work with a guy like that. Somebody that's just bent on being a jerk, basically. This kind of man will do nothing but cause trouble. Proverbs 16:28 through 30. And I think the problem is why people like this exist is because their parents didn't want to deal with them when they were younger, and then the teachers in school probably just didn't want to deal with them. Nobody wants to deal with them, and they just kind of just let it go. The boss doesn't want to deal with them, and he just continues on. Whereas if parents would have beat him, the principal would have beat him, the boss would have fired him the first time he mouthed off, he'd stop acting like that. But nobody wants to deal with him, and he just continues. Proverbs 16:28-30. It says, "A froward man soweth strife, and a whisperer separateth chief friends. A violent man enticeth his neighbor, and leadeth him into the way that is not good. He shutteth his eyes to devise froward things. Moving his lips, he bringeth evil to pass. Right? He walketh with a froward mouth. This guy, he devises things, and then he just starts belching out commands of evil things that he's going to do. He brings evil to pass by moving his lips. And a guy like this has a difficult life ahead of him. Proverbs 22 and verse 5. Because you can kind of usually kind of push your way through life until you meet somebody more bullheaded than yourself. And then all of a sudden, they're going to put an end to it. Proverbs 22:5 says, thorns and snares are in the way of the froward. He that doth keep his soul shall be far from them. So thorns and snares, right? As he walketh with a froward mouth, he's walking into thorns and snares, he's going to have a hard time. It's going to be a painful walk until he figures out to get rid of that froward tongue. Look at Proverbs 13 and verse 15. Proverbs 13:15. I've repeated the second half of this verse many times. Good understanding giveth favor, but the way of transgressors is hard. I've seen little kids, and I just see the temperament of certain kids. I remember one in the Minneapolis church, and I would say that every from time to time, the way of transgressors is hard. This kid is just going to have to learn the hard way. And some people are just like that. Just though thou shouldest bray a fool in a mortar among wheat with a pestle, yet will not his foolishness depart from him. Some people, you can just beat them and grind them to powder, and they are just going to do their own stupid thing. They're not going to change. Their way is going to be hard. And working for a man like this would be miserable. I'd be looking for another job if I was working for a guy like this. 1 Peter 2:18 through 19. But here's the thing. While you work for a guy like this, you know what you do? You be the best employee you can. You be respectful, and you do what he tells you to do, and you take the abuse. Why? Because you're a Christian, and that's what you're supposed to do. 1 Peter 2:18 through 19. But that doesn't mean that you can't be putting out other resumes while you're taking the abuse. God never told you to stay there forever. 1 Peter 2:18 through 19. It says, servants, be subject to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the froward. For this is thankworthy if a man for conscience toward God endure grief, suffering wrongfully. And he kind of there defines for you what a froward man is. A man that would cause you to endure grief wrongfully. That's what a froward guy will do. Employing a man like this is foolish and dangerous. That'd be a good way to go out of business, would be to have a guy like this working for you, especially if he happens to be customer-facing. Right? The last thing you'd want to do is hire a guy like that for customer service with a froward mouth. And wisdom from the Word of God will deliver us from such a wretch as that. Proverbs 2, 10 through 15. Just cover a little ground that we covered a while back. Proverbs 2, 10 through 15. So if you read the Word of God, if you start to understand human nature, and you can easily pick up on cues that people give off, you will very quickly and easily identify the froward man, and you will know how to stay away from him. And this is what the Word of God will do for you. Proverbs 2, 10 through 15 says, when wisdom entereth into thine heart, and knowledge is pleasant unto thy soul, discretion shall preserve thee, understanding shall keep thee, to deliver thee from the way of the evil man, from the man that speaketh froward things, who leave the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice to do evil and delight in the frowardness of the wicked, whose ways are crooked and they froward in their paths. So there was, the word froward was used at least, I think, three times there. And how do you get delivered from that? Wisdom entering into thine heart. And how do you get wisdom? Verse 6. For the Lord giveth wisdom, out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. So you spend time in the Bible, and you will avoid wicked and froward people like that. And maybe you won't take the job for the 2 Peter 2 guy, the froward boss who's going to make your life miserable. So that's why it's important to read the Scripture in addition to all the other reasons for doing so. So that takes care of Proverbs 6:12. Next week, we'll pick up with verse 13.